Random House Audiobooks presents Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Dark Journey, by Elaine Cunningham. Read for you by Alexander Adams. A sunrise corona limned one edge of the planet Merkur, setting its vast northern forests alight with a verdant glow. Viewed from space, the planet appeared as lush and green as Yuuzhan'tar, the long-lost homeworld of Yuuzhan Vong legend. Two Yuuzhan Vong males stood at the viewing portal of a priest ship, deep in contemplation of the scene before them. One was tall and gaunt, with a sloping forehead and sharp aristocratic features scarred by many acts of devotion. These marks and his cunningly wrapped headcloth identified him as a priest of high rank. His companion was younger, broader, and so physically imposing that a first glance yielded no perceptible boundaries between armor and weapons and the warrior who wore them. His countenance was somber, and there was an intensity about him that suggested movement, even though he stood at respectful attention. The priest swept a three-fingered hand toward the scene below. "Dawn, bright death of mortal night," he recited. Harar's words followed the well-worn path of proverb, but there was genuine reverence in his eyes as he gazed upon the distant world. The young warrior touched two fingers to his forehead in a pious gesture, but his attention was less absorbed by the glowing vision of Merkur than the battle raging above it. Silhouetted against the green world was a fist-sized lump of black Yorick coral. This, an aging world ship housing hundreds of Yuuzhan Vong and their slaves and creature servants, looked to be nothing more than lifeless rock. But as Harar's priest ship drew closer, he could make out signs of battle. Tiny coral flyers buzzing and stinging like fire gnats, plasma bolts surging in a frantic, erratic pulse. If life was pain, then the world ship was very much alive. "Our arrival is timely," the priest observed, glancing at the young warrior. "These young Jedi seem determined to prove themselves a worthy sacrifice." "As you say, Eminence." The words were polite, but distracted, as if the warrior gave scant attention. Harar turned a measuring gaze upon his companion. Discord between the priestly and warrior castes was growing more common, but he could discern nothing amiss in Kalila. The son of War Master Tsavong La stood tall among the Yuuzhan Vong. His skin's original gray hue was visible only in the faint strips and whorls separating numerous black scars and tattoos. A cloak of command flowed from hooks embedded in his shoulders. Other implants added spikes to his elbows and to the knuckles on his hands. A single short, thick horn thrust out from the center of his forehead. A difficult implant, and the mark of a truly worthy host. Harar knew himself honored when this promising warrior was assigned to his military escort, but he was also wary and more than a little intrigued. Like any true priest of Yun-Harla, goddess of trickery, Harar relished games of deception and strategy. His old friend Tsavong La was a master of the multi-layered agenda, and Harar expected nothing less from the young commander. Kali turned to meet the priest's scrutiny. His gaze was respectful but direct.
"May I speak freely, Eminence?"
Harar began to suspect Tsavong La's purpose in sending his son to a trickster priest. Candor was a weakness, a potentially fatal one.
"In this matter, consider the War Master's judgment," he advised, hiding words of caution in seeming assent.
The young male nodded solemnly.
"Tsavong La entrusted you with the sacrifice of the twin Jedi. The success of his latest implant is still in the hands of the gods, and you are his chosen intercessor. What the War Master honors, I revere."
He concluded his words by dropping to one knee and lowering his head in a respectful bow. This was hardly the message Harar intended to send, but Kalila seemed content with their exchange. He rose and directed his attention back to the world ship.
"In plain speech, then, it appears the battle is not going as well as anticipated. Perhaps not even as well as Nomanor reported."
Harar's scarred forehead creased in a scowl. He himself held a dubious opinion of the Yuuzhan Vong spy, but Nomanor enjoyed the rank of executor and was not to be lightly criticized.
"Such words veer dangerously close to treason, my young friend." "Truth is never treason," Kalila stated.
The priest carefully weighed these words. To the priesthood of Yunharla and among certain other factions, this proverb was an ironic jest, but there was no mistaking the ringing sincerity in the younger male's tones. Harar schooled his face to match the warrior's earnest expression.
"Pray explain."
Kalila pointed to a small dark shape hurtling away from the world ship at an oblique vector to the priest ship's approach.
"That is the Kastar, the frigate which brought Nomanor to Merkur."
The priest leaned closer to the viewing portal, but his eyes were not nearly as keen as Kalila's enhanced implants. He tapped one hand against the portal. In response, a thin membrane nictitated from side to side, cleaning the transparent surface. The living tissue reshaped, exaggerating the convex curve to provide sharper focus and faint magnification.
"Yes," the priest murmured, noting the distinctive knobs and bumps on the underside of the approaching ship. "And if the battle against the Jedi is all but won, as Nomanor reported, why does he flee? I must speak to him at once."
Kalila turned toward the door and repeated Harar's words as an order. The guards stationed there thumped their fists to opposite shoulders and strode off to tend their commander's bidding. The swift click of chitinous boots announced a subordinate's approach. A female warrior, garishly tattooed in green and yellow, entered the room, a crenellated form cradled in her taloned hands. She bowed and presented the villip to Harar. The priest dismissed her with an absent wave and began to stroke the small, sentient globe. The outer layer peeled back, and the soft tissue within began to rearrange itself into a rough semblance of Nomanor's scarred visage. One eye socket was empty and sunken, and the bruised eyelid seemed to sag into the blue crescent sac beneath. The venom-spitting bowl that had once distinguished Nomanor's countenance was gone, and evidently he had not yet been permitted to replace it. Harar's eyes narrowed in satisfaction. Nomanor had failed repeatedly, but never once had he accepted responsibility for his actions. In a manner most unworthy of a Yuuzhan Vong, he had foisted blame upon others. Harar had suffered a temporary demotion for his part in a failed espionage scheme. Nomanor had merely received a reprimand, even though his agents played a significant role in the plot's failure. In Harar's opinion, the blurred face testified that the god's justice would, in time, be served. The image of Nomanor, imprecise though it was, nevertheless managed to convey a sense of impatience, perhaps even anxiety.
"Your Eminence,"
began Nomanor.
"Your report," Harar broke in curtly.
Nomanor's one eye narrowed, and for a moment Harar thought the executor would protest. As a field agent, Nomanor was seldom required to answer to the priesthood. His silence stretched beyond the bounds of pride, however, and Harar began to fear that Kalila's suspicions had fallen short of grim truth.
"You have lost?" "We have losses,"
Nomanor corrected.
"The Voxen Queen and her spawn were destroyed. Two Jedi prisoners held on the world ship were freed. They escaped, as did several of the others."
Harar looked to Kalila.
"You have sighted the infidel's escape ship?"
The warrior's eyes widened, and for a moment his scarred face held horrified enlightenment, a fleeting emotion that swiftly darkened to wrath.
"Ask who flies the Kastar, the executor or the infidels?"
This possibility had not occurred to Harar. He quickly relayed the question through the attuned Billup.
Some of the Jedi managed to commandeer the frigates,
Nomanor admitted.
We are pursuing and feel confident that we will add the capture of this ship to our other victories.
Capture? Harar's gut tightened, for that single word confirmed the identity of the escaped Jedi.
Capture? Echoed Kalila derisively. Better to reduce the defiled thing to coral dust. What Yuuzhan Vong pilot would wish to enjoin with an infidel-tainted ship?
Several Jedi fell to our warriors,
continued Nomanor, oblivious to both the priest's epiphany and the warrior's scorn.
The younger Solo brother was slain. The War Master will be pleased to learn that Jason Solo is alive and our captive.
Jason Solo, repeated Harar. What of Jaina Solo, his twin?
The silence held for so long that the Villip began to revert back to its original form.
We are in pursuit,
Nomanor said at last.
The Jedi are too few to fly a ship such as the Kastar well or long.
It is an outrage that they fly it at all, interjected Kali La.
Harar sent him a stern glance and then turned back to the Villip.
I assume that you will not take this Jason Solo with you as you pursue his twin. It is said the Jedi can communicate with each other over long distances without either Villips or mechanical abominations to aid them. If this is so, he will surely warn his female counterpart of your approach.
The executor took time to consider Harar's observation.
You have a military escort?
12 coral skippers accompany the priest's ship?
Yes.
Do you wish us to break off in pursuit of Jaina Solo?
The Villip face shape rolled downward and back in a semblance of a nod.
As you rightly observed, the risk of contact between these twin Jedi is considerable. I will take Jason Solo directly to the War Master.
And so the glory goes to the Executor, while his failure is thrust upon the priest, snarled Kalila.
Harar turned away from the Villip.
You are learning, he observed softly. But for the moment, let us disregard Nomanor's ambitions. You were assigned to accompany me to Merkur, no more. It is my task to oversee the sacrifice of the twin Jedi. I must pursue. You are not obligated to accompany me.
The warrior didn't require time to consider.
This Jedi, this Jaina Solo, flies upon a living vessel. That offends me. She escaped a world ship. That should not have been possible. She is a twin, which is rightly reserved as the province of the gods or a portent of greatness. That is blasphemy. I would pursue her to the most godforsaken corner of this galaxy if it meant hitching myself to a pair of molting Gretchens.
A sudden chill shuddered down the priest's spine. Fervor such as Kalila's had always struck Harar as vaguely dangerous. The warrior's faith held a shaper's art, imbuing Harar's facetious words with the sly irony the priest had always associated with his goddess. And was it not said that Yun Harla reserved her most cunning tricks for those who served her best? Anakin was dead. Jason was gone. These thoughts resounded through Jaina Solo's benumbed senses, echoing through an inner silence as profound as that of the watchful stars. These thoughts drowned out the sounds of battle and the frantic running commentary of the 7 young Jedi who struggled to fly the stolen Yuuzhan Vong ship. Like her companions, Jaina was battered and filthy from days of captivity, and from a battle that had lasted too long and cost too much. Only 8 Jedi had fought their way out of the world ship and onto this smaller ship, bringing with them the body of their young leader. The survivors had taken the Yuuzhan Vong frigate quickly, with astonishing ease. Jaina had a dim recollection of searing anger and killing light, of her friend Zek pushing her away from the pilot seat and into the Yuuzhan Vong equivalent of a gunner's chair. She perched there now on the edge of the too large seat, firing missiles of molten rock at the coral skippers pursuing the Jedi and their stolen ship. All of this was a fever dream, nothing more, and Jaina was merely a character caught in her own nightmare. Jason was gone. It didn't seem possible. It wasn't possible. Jason was alive. He had to be. How could she be alive if Jason was not? Her twin brother had been a part of her, and she of him, since before their birth. What they were could not be separated from what they were to each other. Her thoughts tumbled like an X-wing in an out-of-control spiral. Jaina's pilot instincts kicked in, and she eased herself out of the spin. A burst of plasma flared toward the stolen ship. Jaina responded with one of her own. It streamed toward the incoming plasma bolt like a vengeful comet. The two missiles met like a tidal wave and a storm wall. Zek threw himself to one side, straining the umbilicals on the pilot gloves in his attempt to pull the ship aside from the killing spray. Fortunately for the Jedi, their Yuuzhan Vong pursuers were also forced to turn aside. This bought them a moment of relative peace. No immediate danger, no obvious target. Jaina twisted in her seat until she could see the world ship where Anakin had fallen, where Jason had been abandoned. "We'll be back, Jason," she promised. "You hold on, and we'll come for you." "I'll come for you," she added silently. She would go after Jason alone if it came down to that, as Anakin had gone to Yavin 4 to rescue Tahiri. But now, Anakin was dead, and a battered and heartbroken Tahiri watched over his body. The small blonde girl blazed in the Force like a nova. Jaina couldn't help but feel her anguish. The severed bond was different from that shared by twins, but perhaps no less intense. A small, strong hand settled on her shoulder. She felt Tenel Ka's solid presence through the Force. There, but profoundly different. A moment passed before Jaina realized why. Her friend's emotions, usually as straightforward and unambiguous as a drawn blaster, had been carefully shielded. "We are doing the right thing for Jason," Tenel Ka said stoutly. "Because they have only one twin, they will harm neither. We suspected as much, but now we have proof. They are not trying to destroy this ship."
"Couldn't prove it by me," muttered Zek as he jinked sharply to avoid another plasma blast.
"Fact," the warrior woman said bluntly. "Zek, for 2 years you've flown cargo ships. A true contribution, but poor training for this escape."
"Yeah, here's another fact. I haven't got us killed yet."
"And here are several more," Tenel Ka retorted. "Jaina was in Rogue Squadron. She had access to the Republic's intelligence on enemy ships. She has survived more dogfights than anyone here. If we are to survive, you must let her fly."
Zek started to protest, but another barrage cut him off. Jaina quickly ran through the list of survivors as she considered Tenel Ka's words. 8 Jedi remained, half of their original strike force. Tahiri was only 15 and no pilot. She had been terribly wounded in body and spirit, and Tekli, the Chadra Fan healer, was busy attending her. The reptilian Tizar, the sole survivor of the Barabel hatchmates, was working the shielding station in the stern. Lobaka was needed everywhere, and since their escape, he'd been dashing about patching the living ship's wounds. That left Tenel Ka, Alima Rar, and Ganner Rhizode. Jaina quickly dismissed Tenel Ka. Yuuzhan Vong's ships were not designed with one-armed pilots in mind. Forget Alima. The Twi'lek female was emotionally fragile. Jaina could feel her teetering on the edge of mindless, vengeful frenzy. Put Alima in the pilot seat, and she'd likely plot a suicidal plunge directly at the world ship's Dovin Basel. Ganner was a powerful Jedi, an impressive-looking man whose role in this mission had been to serve as decoy for the real leader, Anakin. Ganner had his points, but he wasn't enough of a pilot to get them out of this. Tenel Ka was right, Jaina concluded. Anakin had died saving the Jedi from the deadly Voxen. He'd left his last mission in Jason's hands, not hers, but she was the one left to see it through. The Jedi,
at least the Jedi on this ship, were now her responsibility. Lobaka padded up and howled a query. "Get on navigation," Jaina said, jerking her head toward a rounded brain-like console. "Hyperspace jump. Destination? Anywhere but Merkur. Can you input coordinates?" The Wookiee settled down and regarded the biological computer, pensively scratching at the place on one temple where a black streak ran through his ginger-colored fur. "Now would be good," Ganner prompted. Lobaka growled a Wookiee insult and tugged the cognition hood down over his head. After a moment, he extended one of his retracted climbing claws and carefully sliced through the thin upper membrane. With astonishing delicacy, he began to touch neural clusters and rearrange slender living fibers, grunting in satisfaction with each new insight. "Set course for Coruscant." "Why Coruscant?" protested Alima Rar. Her headtails, which were mottled with darkening bruises and practically quilted together with bacta patches, began to twitch in agitation. "We'll be shot down by Republic guards long before we reach the planet's atmosphere, unless the Peace Brigade gets to us first." "The Peace Brigade are enemy collaborators. They have no reason to attack this ship," Ganner countered. "On the other hand, the Republic has no reason not to." Tenel Ka shook her head sharply, sending her disheveled red braids swinging. "Sometimes a live enemy is worth 100 dead ones. A small ship like this offers no real threat. The patrol will escort us in, hoping to capture a live ship and curious to know the motives of the crew." "That's my thinking," Jaina agreed. "Also, Rogue Squadron has a base on Coruscant, and there are people in the control tower who know all the pilot's quirks. If I can put this rock through some distinctive maneuvers, there's an outside chance that someone might recognize me. How's it coming, Lobaka?" The Wookiee made a couple of deft adjustments, then signaled readiness by bracing massive paws on either side of the console and uttering a resigned groan. Jaina kicked the ship into hyperdrive. The force of the jump threw her back into the oversized seat and strained the umbilicals attaching her hood and gloves to the ship. Plasma bolts spread out into a golden sunrise haze. Stars elongated into brilliant lines. Then silence and darkness engulfed the Jedi, and a floating sensation replaced the intense pressure of sublight acceleration. Jaina pulled off the hood and collapsed back into her seat. As the adrenaline surge ebbed, Jaina felt the returning tide of grief. Jaina slumped in the pilot seat, too exhausted for sleep. She felt an approaching presence and turned to face Tekli, the young Chandrafan healer. The furry little female looked perturbed. All four of the nostrils on her upturned snout flared, as if she were scenting the air for danger. Her large rounded ears were folded back into subdued half-moons, and her quick, almost furtive movements made her look more rodent-like than usual. Jaina hauled herself upright.
"How is Tahiri?"
"Sleeping."
The healer sighed.
"The broken bone in her arm is set, her wounds patched as best I can. But I do not envy her her dreams."
Dreams. Jaina grimaced at the thought.
"Why take the chance? First opportunity, I'm going straight into a healing trance."
"That is probably wise."
Tekli stood quietly, her long-fingered hands tightly clasped. She looked as if she were trying to gather her thoughts, or perhaps her courage. Jaina smoothed a hand wearily over her shoulder-length brown hair.
"This isn't a diplomatic dinner. How about we jettison the protocol and get to whatever's on your mind?"
"You have set course for Coruscant."
"That's right."
"Is this wise? We are flying an enemy ship. We cannot communicate with the city towers to relay our identities and intentions."
Jaina folded her arms.
"How many living Vong ships do you suppose the Republic has?"
The little Chandrafan blinked.
"I don't know.
Last I heard, two. By now, they could both be dead and useless. They don't seem to live long without regular attention from the Shapers, the Vong maintenance techs. Chances are the Republic will be so glad to get their hands on a living ship and living pilot, they'll give us landing clearance."
"As they did to the supposed Yuuzhan Vong defector?" the priestess Elan?
Jaina blew out a long sigh.
I see your point.
How can the Republic know that we're not faking surrender? For all they know, we could be on a suicide mission to release some biological weapon upon Coruscant.
It has crossed my mind. No doubt it may occur to others.
Jaina glanced at Lobaka, who was still poking delicately about in the frigate's navibrain.
What about it, Loey? Any chance this thing can change hyperspace destination without emerging to sublight speed?
The Wookiee sent her an incredulous stare, then cast his eyes upward and shook his head in disgust. She shrugged this off.
So we emerge into Coruscant space, keep out of the main lanes while we program another hyperspace jump. There must be somewhere where we can land this rock in one piece rather than as a shower of gravel. Then we can make our way to a population center and send communications from there.
The Chadrafan's lopped back ears perked up into their usual rounded shape.
Yes, much better.
Got a destination in mind?
Galanor, Jaina mused. That's in the Hapes cluster, but it's relatively close. There are vast wild areas. We could probably get in undetected.
Tenel Ka's head came up sharply.
I know Galanor well. It could be done. Anyone else have anything to add? Alima? Tizar? How about you, Zek?
You're the pilot, Zek responded. But I see your point. We should come to a consensus before the need for action arises.
Galanor sounds good. How much longer in hyperspace, Loey?
The Wookiee held up a massive furred paw and began to count down from five. Jaina reached for the cognition hood and pulled it back over her head. She was instantly flooded with images of light. Not the expected sudden appearance of blurry star lines, but a multiverse of frantically strobing, swirling lights. The skies over Coruscant blazed with fleeing transport ships, darting E-wings and X-Jays, strangely undisciplined squadrons of coral skippers. Brief, brilliant explosions flared and faded, each coming on the heels of another in rapid cadence.
I know it's not your fault,
Jaina yelled as she jinked to avoid several red streaks exploding from X-Wing laser cannons.
You didn't get us lost. This is Coruscant.
This was Coruscant,
murmured Zek, his voice hollow with shock and grief. Ganner thrust him out of the way and dropped into the gunner's seat.
Line them up, Jaina, and I'll take them out.
A tiny blue comet flared toward them. The missile blinked out of existence meters from the ship. Immediately, a secondary attack, a barrage of laser fire, hammered the coral hull. The frigate shuddered. Fine black dust showered down over the Jedi.
Those were Republic ships, Ganner said grimly. I can't return fire on them.
Instead, he sent a plasma bolt hurling toward a Yuuzhan Vong skip. Alima lunged at him, seizing his arm with both hands and jerking his hand free of the targeting glove.
We came dressed for the wrong party, she reminded him. Keep that up and everyone will be firing at us.
Jaina opened her mind, reached out as far as the ship's considerable sensors could span. Information engulfed her. The data was staggering, the conclusion inescapable. Coruscant was lost, and the fleeing Republic ships were badly outnumbered by the invading force. The Twi'lek was right. Any attempt to help would only draw the ire of the Yuuzhan Vong and place the Jedi survivors squarely between the warring factions. She glanced at Lobaka, tilted her hooded head at an inquiring angle. For a moment, the Wookiee's face reflected her own conflicted thoughts. He offered a half-hearted comment about the enemy of an enemy being a friend. Before Jaina could respond, a warning sizzled through the hood and into her mind. Her gaze darted toward a proton torpedo, cutting a livid blue streak toward them. Something tells me, she replied as she dodged the Republic ship's missile, that we won't be making many friends today. Leia grimaced as a painfully familiar X-Wing darted directly into the Falcon's flight path.
Are you sure Kip Duran wasn't hooked up to that scrambled Yamos?
She said tartly.
Watch, Han said in a smug tone.
He delivered an open-handed whack to the control panel. A concussion missile exploded toward the Jedi pilot's ship. As if he'd expected this, Kip whipped his X-Wing into a hard rolling turn. Han's missile put a solid hit on the skip pursuing Kip. A quick grin tugged at one corner of Han's mouth. Caught him that one myself. Are you bragging or confessing? Kip's fighting on the same side we are, he reminded. Not everyone agrees with his methods, but no one gives more than he does. Leia closed her eyes as the ever-present grief swept over her in waves, followed swiftly by the stark fear that came from knowing she could lose two more children. That's true enough. Kip was more than willing to give your daughter to the cause. She glanced over at her husband. His bleak expression and haunted eyes recalled the terrible months after Chewbacca's death and his struggle to accept the vulnerability of those he loved. Remorse jolted through Leia. She was not the only one who had lost a son. She touched Han's arm lightly.
I'm sorry, Han. Jaina can take care of herself, and the Cernpadal mission probably ended up moving the war effort forward. That doesn't change the fact that Kip lied to Jaina. Worse, he used the Force to sway her judgment. I just don't trust Kip.
Luke does.
Luke is...
She paused, considered.
Optimistic.
Han snorted. Since when did you start pulling your punches? We've got two Jedi Masters aboard. Luke's here and Mara. What could go wrong? His wife responded with a wan smile and turned back to the navigational computer. Her fingers poised over the controls, uncertain. Where do we go now? She wondered aloud. An out-of-control skip spun toward them. Bursts of fire erupted from the Falcon's belly guns as Luke Skywalker reduced the skip to rubble. A large chunk of coral slammed into the forward shield. The cabin lights blinked out, then flared uncertainly back. Anywhere but here, Han said. Leia began to input coordinates for a brief hyperspace jump. Her fingers faltered to a stop as a strange sensation crept over her. A presence perceived through the Force, yet one that felt more like a gathering storm cloud than a living being. Her brow furrowed as she tried to make sense of it. The touch on her shoulder made her jump. You're wound about three turns too tight, he observed. Suddenly, the answer came to her. She sat up, pulling away from Han.
Jaina!
The color leached from his face. She's not...
No, Leia said hastily. But she's still in danger. Only now she's nearby. Circle around, head back toward the battle.
As Han pulled the Falcon around, Leia's brown eyes scanned the roiling skies. A Yuuzhan Vong frigate twisted through the confusion, several X-Wings in close pursuit. Coral skippers converged on the frigate, surrounding it with a protective convoy. Several pairs of mismatched ships peeled away as the situation devolved into a chaotic dogfight. There, she said, pointing toward the frigate and a small fleet of beleaguered X-Wings giving dogged pursuit.
Jaina's over there. Could she be flying the Yuuzhan Vong ship?
Suddenly, the enemy frigate pulled away and described a tight rising loop. One way to find out. Han fired a missile at the frigate, waiting a hair's breadth longer than he had with Kip. The Yuuzhan Vong ship rolled deftly aside as if the pilot had been expecting the attack. Han's missile struck one of the skips that trailed protectively in its wake. That's Jaina, Han said firmly. Thousands of pilots can get from here to there in an X-Wing, but how many could make a hunk of rock dance like a Twi'lek harem girl? Han, two, he stated, answering his own question. And I'm the other one. Leia turned to the Force for confirmation. Again, she reached out to Jaina. Again, she perceived not the vivid, impetuous energy she'd always associated with her daughter, but a storm cloud presence. Cool, impending, pitiless. Leia frowned. Anger led to the dark side. She had heard this all her life. Never had Leia considered the possibility that Jaina, the most pragmatic and least complicated of her children, might slip into darkness. "Decide," Han said tersely. "The Vong could blame that frigate's maneuver on the scrambled Yamask, but sooner or later, Jaina's gonna have to pick a side." She quickly shook off her fears and switched the comm to hailing frequency. "This is Leia Organa Solo, aboard the Millennium Falcon. The Yuuzhan Vong frigate nearby is under the command of my daughter, Lieutenant Jaina Solo. Her Yuuzhan Vong escort does not realize this. Hold your fire, and we'll see that the frigate escapes and the coral skippers do not." There was a moment's hesitation, then the pursuing X-Wings pulled away. The intercom crackled.
"Leia, are you sure about this?"
asked Mara.
"I hate to admit it, but I don't feel Jaina out there."
She glanced at Han, who nodded.
"We're sure."
The Yuuzhan Vong frigate, its way clear, shot off in rapid acceleration and disappeared into hyperspace. The Falcon followed, taking the short jump Leia had programmed. Han's shoulders slumped. His hand found hers, claimed it. "We did the right thing, didn't we? I mean, letting a potential enemy go?" The unwitting implication of his words nearly broke Leia's heart. She met her husband's eyes and read the rare moment of self-doubt written there. "That was Jaina," she asserted, both answering and avoiding his question. His gaze sharpened. "Then why do you look so worried?" "Jason wasn't with Jaina. I can still sense him," she added hastily. "But he wasn't with her." Han nodded, taking this in. "Then we'll have to trust them both to find their way back." She blinked, startled again by the unintentional aptness of his comments. "You're right. They're grown now, and capable. But it isn't easy to let them go their own way." "No, it isn't." He attempted a cocky grin and managed a decent, if decidedly one-sided, imitation. "Since when did any of us need things to be easy?" A storm raged outside General Baron Suntirfell's window, the first of the winter monsoon season. Frozen rain swirled through roiling gray clouds and rattled against the transparasteel windows. "A hard winter was on its way," mused the general, "one that could last for several Corellian years." The Chiss base, the latest of many that Fell had established over the years, was set in a particularly harsh environment of an inhospitable world. Most of his advisors had perceived no reason why anyone would choose to place a base here. Fell only hoped the Yuuzhan Vong would follow the same logic. He turned away from the window to study the officer standing at stiff attention before his desk. The young man wore the formal black uniform of the Syndic Mithra Nurodo's household phalanx and the insignia of a colonel. His black hair was cut short, exposing the entire length of the scar that ran up from his right eyebrow well into his hairline. A thin streak of white hair followed the path of that scar, as if to emphasize the maturity that had come too soon, and at great price. "We have had this discussion before, Colonel," Fell commented. "This phalanx is committed to the same goals you've espoused. We responded at Garki. We fought at Ithor. The Imperial Command recalled Admiral Pelion after that debacle, with what they considered to be good reason. Given the outcome of that engagement and the withdrawal of Imperial support, I saw little value in committing phalanx squadrons." "I disagree." The young colonel bowed to emphasize that his words expressed opinion, but not disrespect. "I will concede that no one, not the New Republic or the Imperial forces or the Chiss, could counter the biological weapons which destroyed Ithor. The presence of this household's phalanx had no impact on this outcome. Ithor, however, was the only world utterly destroyed. The invaders have followed more conventional tactics in their subsequent conquests." "And therein lies the problem. How successful were you and your rogue squadron allies in fending off any of these conquests through conventional tactics?" The young man's lips thinned. "My two squadrons were recalled shortly after Ithor, sir.
We had neither the time nor the opportunity to make an appreciable difference. This is not an excuse, sir, but simple fact.
2 squadrons, the general repeated.
24 clawcraft and a beacon ship. How much difference could this force have made at Ord Mantell or Douro? Hundreds, possibly thousands of worlds are under the Yuuzhan Vong control.
With respect, sir, I was commissioned in this household to serve and uphold the ideals of Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Which did not, I might point out, include stupidity, the general observed coldly. I expected better of you. A not uncommon dynamic between fathers and their sons.
Colonel Jagadfell acknowledged the reprimand with a small bow.
But we could do more.
Jag took a step forward, his expression intense, his formality forgotten.
You know what we have faced out here. The Yuuzhan Vong might have caught Borsk Felya and his ilk unaware, but the Chiss have long expected something of this nature. In fact, we have turned aside foes that might have swept across the galaxy and left little for these new invaders to destroy.
The Baron's eyes narrowed and his lips pursed as he considered his son's passionate words.
Do you know how to stop the Yuuzhan Vong?
A hint of a frown touched Jagged's forehead.
No, sir.
Then go find out. Report back. Once we've a better grasp of tactics and strategy, you'll have your squadrons back, and more besides.
Jag's eyes widened and flicked to his father's face.
Yes, sir.
The Baron grimaced and tapped a small metal cube on his desk.
You might not be quite so eager once you've heard this report. This holovid just came in from our agents in the Corps. It contains, among other things, a recording of Leia Organa Solo's exhortation to the defenders of Coruscant. She urged them not to give up, as she is not, despite the recent death of one of her Jedi children.
This time, Jag's gaze shifted fully to the general.
Which one?
Fell lifted one eyebrow. Excuse me?
Which of Ambassador Solo's children fell in battle?
Anakin, I believe, the younger son. Jag nodded thoughtfully, and there was something very akin to relief on his face.
Was there any news of the other two?
A speculative gleam crept into the Baron's gaze.
You have met the Solo twins, I take it.
Jason, no. Jaina Solo is a pilot with Rogue Squadron.
Ah, I was wondering why such momentous news as Coruscant's fall went over your head with a meter to spare.
A faint color suffused Jag's face, and a faintly puzzled expression flickered in his eyes. Baron Fell suspected that his son was also somewhat unclear on that point. Well, he would learn soon enough.
Jag quickly veered away from his uncharacteristic tangent and back onto a more familiar vector.
Coruscant was not only attacked, but captured?
It would appear so. This leads us to your next assignment.
In recent years, the New Republic has been characterized by increasing dissent. The loss of their central seat could polarize them for a very long time. The Baron fell silent. For a long moment, he studied his son.
You will be flying straight into a maelstrom.
Jag glanced pointedly toward the window and the ice storm beyond.
This is what I was trained to do, no more.
Then it's settled.
Fell rose and handed a single holovid cube to his son. This contains the most recent military updates, as well as the specs on the new ships you'll be flying. I'll leave the selection of pilots to you. He extended his hand. They clasped hands briefly, then Jag stepped back and offered a crisp, formal bow. Baron Fell watched his son stride to the door. He had never turned away from duty, and he would not now. But nothing he'd faced in his long career had been as difficult as this. Sending his third child to serve, and most likely to die. The lights on the pilot console of the Millennium Falcon blinked sporadically, like the solar glow sign on a low-rent cantina after a few days of cloudy weather. Han Solo scowled at the controls, then balled his fist and slammed a much-dented section of the console. The sensors flickered back to life.
He sent a sidelong glance and a smug little smile toward his co-pilot. Leia shook her head, her brown eyes fixed on a small screen.
No good. The readouts from R2 show we need more sophisticated repairs, and soon.
He leaned over and studied the technical data. Yeah, he admitted after a few moments. The problem is finding a quiet place.
The Hapes cluster, she suggested evenly, raising her eyes on her husband's face.
His eyes went cautious. Last I heard, the Hapens weren't real fond of visitors.
True enough. Not long ago, though, Tenennial Joe sent a message to the Senate suggesting that she might open Hapes to refugees.
I understand your hesitation, Leia said, referring to their unorthodox courtship and Han's residual distrust for his former rival.
But I made my choice, and so far, I haven't regretted it. Too much.
She didn't mention her last encounter with the former Queen Mother of Hapes, Prince Isolder's mother. Tachum had made a point of mentioning her son's marital troubles, and her wish that Isolder had chosen Princess Leia as his wife rather than Tenennial Joe, a warrior woman from remote Dathomir. Leia knew how manipulative Tachum could be, and she certainly didn't want to add to a volatile situation. But at the moment, other considerations superseded these concerns.
Tenel Ka was a member of the Jedi Strike Force, Leia reminded him. That makes it possible, and perhaps likely, that Jaina will put the Yuuzhan Vong ship down on Hapes.
Han's eyes lit up.
Makes sense.
She's a sensible kid, so you're probably right. The matter settled to his satisfaction, he began setting course for the Hapes cluster.
Should we get Luke and Mara's opinion? Leia asked.
When it's their ship we're flying, sure. He smiled briefly to take any possible sting from the words, then kicked the ship into hyperspace acceleration.